Hello, Twins fans. This is John Swole with TwinsTrivia.com, and today we're going to be speaking with former Twins closer Bill Daley. Bill had such a great year in 1963 that they even wrote a song about him called "Won't You Come In, Bill Daley." So, without further ado, let's talk to Bill. Bill, you were born in Arlington, Virginia. Can you share with us what your childhood was like?
Probably a normal childhood. My dad and my brother and I, we did a lot of fishing and hunting as we were growing up. But outside of that, doing the chores around the house, playing some sports, just a regular childhood, I reckon.
What kind of sports did you play in high school?
I played football and baseball. And my dad, my senior year in high school, wanted to know what I really wanted to do, and I told him I wanted to be a baseball player. So he taught me how to play football my last year.
Really?
And, my brother got hurt playing football in high school, and my dad said that there's no sense playing if you don't want to, you know, pursue it any further.
Okay. What positions did you play in high school?
I was a pitcher. Well, of course, in high school, you pitch, you play first base, or, you know, you play two positions in high school.
Sure.
But I bet you play first base.
Okay. You did not attend any college, as far as I know, but you were signed as a free agent by the Cleveland Indians in 1953. What were the circumstances of you signing with the Indians?
Well, I looked all around, and our last game, when we had our state tournament, it was about 11 or 12 scouts came to the house, and I sat down and talked with each one of them, and then I sat down with my dad, and at that time, Cleveland had your Bob Feller, your Early Wins.
Sure.
And these guys were, like, they were starting to get old, and I said to my dad, well, here's a good chance, you know, these guys are going to be going out in a few years, so both of us thought Cleveland would be the probably the best bet.
Mm-hmm. Did you get a signing bonus?
Yes, sir. I get $500. I give my mom and dad $250 of that, because I thought back in them days, well, shoot, I'd live the rest of my life on $250. Of course, it didn't work out that way.
No, I can understand that. So you started your minor league career in Class C ball in Sherbrooke, I believe, at the age of 18 in 1953. You then advanced up the minor league chain, playing in places like Fargo, Moorhead, Keokuk, Mobile, San Diego, Sacramento, and Salt Lake City before you got the first call to the big leagues in 1961. Can you tell us what it was like playing in the minor leagues?
I got married after, when I came back from Sherbrooke, Canada. I married my high school sweetheart, I guess you'd say. And in the minor leagues, it's probably one of the best things that ever happened to us. We learned how to take care of money. Mm-hmm. We, of course, learned how to live with each other, being away from home at 18. I couldn't say we got in an argument. You run home to mama, or I run home to my mama. We learned to tough it out. We learned tough living. We ate a lot of hot dogs and pork and beans. And I guess what you'd say is we learned a lot about life the hard way.
Sure. Yeah, it can be a tough life in the minor leagues, I understand.
Well, today, I don't know what kind of money these kids should make today. Back in those days, of course, you know, the money wasn't that good, we live different places. We have three dogs right now. We live different places that there's no way I would have put these three dogs in it right now. I mean, it was tough times, but we grew through it, and we probably learned a lot from it.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. You toiled in the minor leagues for 8 years before you were called up. Did you ever think that the day may never come when you would step on a major league pitching mound?
2 years before I finally got to the majors, I told my wife, I said, I'm quitting. This is a tough life down here, and I'm not going anywhere. And my wife stepped up and said, no, you won't. I'm not going to listen to you the rest of their life saying, if I'd have stayed one more year. She says, no, you won't. She says, you'll give it two more years. And she says, then if nothing comes, then they'll be fine. Well, in the 2 years, my second year, I did get to a major. So I owe all of this to my wife.
Smart woman.
Sir?
She's a smart woman.
Well, I guess I get probably dumb sex she did with marry me, but outside of that, she, yes, sir. Yes, sir, she's a very beautiful and very smart woman.
Oh, that's great. Tell us, you know, finding out that you're going up to the major leagues for the first time is always an exciting time. And when you found out that you were getting called up, what was the situation and how did you react?
Well, my wife had just come out to Salt Lake City, and we was on a road trip. She came out, and of course, we left 2 days later on the road trip. On the road trip, the manager came up to the hotel room one afternoon and said, "Bill, you've just been called up." And I said, "No, brother, my wife just got here of 2 days, drove in from Phoenix, Arizona." And we had to say, "Hey, baby, goodbye." She drove home, and I headed for Cleveland. And I thought about being nervous. But probably outside of when we had our two children, it's probably the most nervous I've ever been in my life.
No, that's, you know, it always happens in kind of unique ways, and it's always exciting to hear from the players that I talk to, and you know what the circumstances were when they got called up and what their thoughts were and everything.
Well, like I said, it's something you always hope, pray for, and yeah. Then when it happens, you know, the big question comes in, you know, can I do it? Am I good enough? And of course, then the wait comes. So you get there, and you get in your first game, and finally you say, "This is a game I played all my life. There's no difference here than it was down there. Even though you know you think I'm at the top of the world now."
Yep.
But of course, you like I tell people, they say, "What's the difference?" And I said, "Well, you're in high school, you have one or two good ball players. And you go to college, you have four or five good ball players. And you go to the major leagues, and they're all good."
Absolutely.
So, your shortstop is better, your second baseman is better. A lot of people have asked me, what kind of pitches different did you throw? Didn't throw anything different in the majors than it did in the minors. You've got smarter catchers. And like I said, your first, second, third outfielders, they're all top of the line. So in high school, where the ground ball hit for the shortstop ended up to be a two-bagger because he'd field it and throw it over the first baseman's head or something. Then, you know, It was just you were playing with all top-notch guys.
Yeah, that makes a big difference when you have professionals behind you that
yes, sir.
Experience. You made your major league debut in an extra inning game against the Boston Red Sox at Cleveland Stadium on August 17, 1961.
Yes,
and you pitched four scoreless innings in a game the Indians eventually ended up winning. Can you tell us about that first big league game?
Well, the biggest thing I remember about that game, I came into the game the bases loaded, and I swore I'd never forget the third baseman's name, but I have over the years. The count was three balls and no strikes, and there was nobody out. And here's some dumb, skinny kid walks into a game. As it was, I struck him out, and the next guy hit into a double play. And that's probably as far as any game I was ever in. I'll probably remember that more than anything, you know, that I ever did.
Sure.
And,
that's
I guess that's the time that I found out, hey, this is baseball. The guy's got a bat in his hand. You got a baseball in your hand. There's a home plate. You got those strikes. There was really no difference, like I said, outside of being scared to death.
Now, that's great. Later in that 61 season, you got your first big league win against Kansas City Athletics. What do you remember about that game, and do you still have the baseball from your first major league win?
You know, we I guess over the years, you always collect things that you want to pass on to your youngins.
Sure.
Over the years of all the moving and everything what we've done, I lost that. I lost my gloves. I don't know whatever happened to it. But I do have a baseball bat with my name on it. I don't know why. I wasn't the greatest hitter in the world, even though I did hit a home run in L.A. one time, which I think all the announcers passed out, and I think half the ball club passed out, but I still have that. But that ball's gone, makes up my glove's gone. I do have a shirt from the Twins.
Okay.
I have a pair of stirrups from the Twins, which you look at every now and then, and you say, geez, one day I wore them. One day I held that back in my hand, and then you get back to reality.
Yeah, no, that's... But just having the opportunity to have, say that you played in the major leagues is really an accomplishment, though.
Well, now, the only bad thing about that, not the bad thing, sometimes today, and you can cut this out if you want to, sometimes today... you don't really feel that good about saying that. With the steroids and the
sure.
stuff that goes on in professional sports today, sometimes when people say, oh, you used to play professional baseball, you stop for a minute, and kind of hesitate, thinking, geez, you always looked at sports as kids grew up, they had their idols, and today is taking steroids or... is that what you want your kid to go up to him because his idol took steroids or I don't know.
No.
I think it's a great game. It was always a great game. I just hope some of this stuff doesn't ruin the game the way we always thought of it.
Yeah, it's changed a lot, and the money is so much different, and I don't know, it's the owners have so much invested in the players, and it's just a tough situation all the way around. But
how can you take Pete Rose, a guy that bet on a couple ball games, and I don't think he bet on any that he played in, but bet on a couple ball games and was kept out of the Hall of Fame, and you got guys today in the steroids. If Mickey Mantle, Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, if they had to take the steroids back in them days, probably nobody of this caliber we got today could even come close to anything. I don't think these guys did it on their ability to do it, and they didn't have to enhance themselves with some chemical or whatever to make them stronger or make them quicker. Or if you don't have guts enough to say I can do it, then why yep. take these drugs and stuff? I'm not saying that I would do it. If I had a chance to make $10 million, that's what they say. You got kids out there today watching these guys saying, look, this guy made $10 million. He's on steroids. He's on this. Back in those days, you played ball, you played on a count pass or somewhere, you thought about being a major league ball player, but you didn't think about taking steroids or doing this or doing that. And that's what I think today. I don't watch it. I couldn't tell you who won the World Series, or unless somebody comes up and says, oh, the Yankees did this, or you can ask my wife for the TV. I'd rather go out and watch a bunch of little leagues.
Uh-huh.
Of course, I'm part for about 6 years down here, but I would rather watch these little kids, and they're playing, they're giving 100%. I believe a lot of these major leaguers today are giving 60% or, for $10 million, I'd have pulled the ballpark down with my bare hands. For $10 million a day, they got a little fingernail that hurts, or their big toe don't feel good, they're out for a week, or it's a different game today.
Yeah. I talk to a guy periodically that has a website that, where he has done a lot of work and claims that the 1960s were the best era in baseball. and he has, you know, written a lot about it and researched a lot of the players that played in the 60s. And when you look at some of the names that played in the 60s and in that, you know, in the, roughly in that time period, boy, there was some great ball players.
Yes, sir. I was going to say, and these guys played on their ability to play. Mickey Mantle played, my gosh, injured, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Went through a lot of pain and everything, but he did it on his own ability, not because he was taking some enhancement drug or something that was going to make him stronger or take all the pain away. Or you know, these guys, you give credit to Yuli Wade, Willie Mays, like I say, Hank Aarons, your Whitey Fords. You had guys back in those days that loved the game, and they played hard. After the game was over, there was a lot of times we went out we would go out and have dinner and have a couple of drinks.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the biggest thing we were coming to drugs. But you just knocked this guy on your rear end, but that night you'd sit and have a cocktail with him and talk about the game, because he knew, you know, you didn't throw it to hurt him, you didn't throw it to hit him.
Sure.
You just throw it to say, hey, you know, you swung at that a little bit too hard, or you're staying a little bit too close to the plate, or whatever, but you were friends.
Yeah, it was just a different time, and you know, the players were just so different. You, in 1961, Jimmy Pearsall was an outfielder on your team. Can you tell us what Pearsall was like as a teammate?
One of the greatest guys, of course, I love him, but one of the greatest guys that ever lived. Jimmy taught me a lot. He come down to the thing that I remember him one time telling me. He says, you know, he says, they think I'm crazy. He says, they're paying me an extra $10,000 a year to be crazy. He said, would you be crazy, Bill? I'd be as crazy as they want me to. And he's telling me all the time, listen, if somebody invites you out, you know, one of the fans, or somebody, he said, you get the biggest steak on the menu. Well, I walked in a restaurant one night, and Jimmy, he kind of whistled, you know, and I looked over. He pointed, he had a T-bone steak that must weigh 8 pounds. And he winked at me, you know, like, hey, this is what I was, you know, this is what I was talking about. But going back to do the same thing, I was crazy. Guy was a great ball player. He played hard. As he said, he probably wasn't a $30,000 a year ball player per se, but they gave him an extra $10,000 because he was crazy, because people come to the ball game to see crazy. I remember him climbing up the screen behind home plate one time, you know. So people come there to see, hey,
yeah,
that Pearsall is crazy. Well, like he said, if they want to give me $10,000, you know, I'll do double backflips and I'll climb the screen. But as far as being a downright, like me talking to you, being a nice guy, you couldn't have found a better guy that would sit and talk to some dumb rookie and help him, you know, instead of mm-hmm. saying, you know, hey, this guy's a rookie. He was a fabulous guy.
Huh. That's great to hear, because, you know, you hear all kinds of stories about him, and, you know, this all goes back a lot of years. And so I like to hear stories, you know, that, you know, kind of relate to the players, you know, which was when I first started following baseball, was in the late 50s and the 60s, and it's just kind of fun to know a little bit more about them.
Well, like I say, these were average guys. These were guys that played ball because we loved the game. It's like right now, I'm a security guard at an Army ammunition plant. I just pulled the double I told you the other night.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 75 years old. I'm working a lot of times, 50, 55, 60 hours a week.
Wow.
It's a different world. We got some young kids up there that if they make 5 days, they're lucky. They come. I've been there 5 years, I was late one time. I was 5 minutes late. One day I got there and my neighbor called and said they thought my wife's had a heart attack. I took my gun off, handed it to my lieutenant. I said, I'm gone. That's the day I missed. I was there, but I took off. In 5 years, these young kids, they missed 3 or 4 days a month because the value of working is not there.
Yep, I agree.
The job they get paid for, but if they don't show up, some old man like me will take your place. It went back to the same thing as baseball. We played hurt. We played days that we went out there that you didn't want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But that was your job. You was there because you loved the game. You was there because you wanted to be there. So, like I said, it's not only in baseball sports, but what I've seen over the years since I've got at it, it's a different world today all over.
And like you say, it's everywhere. When I started working after I got out of the Navy in 1968, when I was working, I wanted to get all the overtime I could get because I needed the money and everything. And today, you know, overtime is something that people don't want to work. I mean, they value apparently their time off a lot more than they value, you know, the money that they could earn working to get ahead, and they look at their jobs quite a bit differently. They figure that if they get hired, that within a couple of months they should be at least getting promoted and, you know, getting close to making a whole lot more money.
That's what I'm going to say. This, I've had a couple of these kids say, Mr. Billy, you're retired, aren't you? I said, well, I'm retired, but I didn't get any retirement out of baseball because I didn't get my 5 years in. But I said, yes, I'm on Social Security. My wife's on Social Security. And I said, we have a little trophy shop. And they said, well, why in the world are you still working? I said, because if I want to go out and buy something, I can tell my wife, honey, we have enough money. I'd like to get a new bow, for bow hunting. Or,
sure.
Or I'd like to get a new set of camouflage to clothes. But these kids, none of them have any money. They're going to cut their phone bill off. They're going to lose the car. They're going to repossess the car. But they can't work 5 days a week.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know if mom and dad do it or the government does it, or I know we got three of them out there that have about 4 or 5 kids, and I think they knock down about $9,000 a year in tax money. So I think these young kids today say, hey, the more babies we can have, the more money we're going to get back, the less I got to work. I don't know what it is. I've never been in that category, and I can't think the way they do. The only thing I know, I promised a man I'd give him 8 hours a day and 5 days a week, and I come to find out that don't work. It's ended up to be 16 hours a day and 6 days a week.
Yeah, it's... You wonder where things are going, but I'm sure that our parents kind of said the same thing about us when we were growing up. Because when I grew up on a dairy farm, and we ended up getting up at 5 a.m. milking the cows, going to school, come home, milk the cows. You were back in the house about 8 p.m.
But you learned the value of doing a day's work. You know the value of being able to go to a movie or learn the value of having a dollar in your hand or something.
Sure.
And not having somebody knocking on your door saying, hey, I'm trying to get that car. Or you had to work for it, but you had it.
Yep.
And you felt a whole lot better than you did sitting on your butt. What gets me, these kids talk about the job, and I will be very honest with you. My job, we carry 38s on a hip.
Mm-hmm.
My job is driving around in an automobile watching a deer and a turkey. Now, if these kids can consider that work, they don't know the real world. We just had a scare the other day. They thought a fellow tried to get through our lines down there, the same thing that you've done. They want the same thing I got, but they want to give to them.
Yeah.
They don't want to go around and say, the one thing I'm proud of, but there's three things I'm proud of more than anything. I married a wonderful, beautiful lady. I'm proud of that. I had two great kids. I'm proud of them. Baseball was probably my fourth. But outside of that, I'm proud that I can go give a man eight hours a day and not want to back up and get my paycheck. That I'm walking in looking straight in the eye and say,
I earned that
my paycheck today.
Yep, I earned that money. I agree with you 100%, and things are definitely not like that anymore. You finished your first big league season with a 1-0 record in 12 games, and you had an ERA of 0.95, but yet you did not make the Indians team out of spring training in 62. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, sir. And if you go back and we take your history, remember that's when the big bonuses come out. At that time, Cleveland signed Sam McDowell.
Sudden
Sam.
Yeah.
Sudden Sam got, like I used to tell people, I was Sam's caddy there. Sam got the big bonus. I'd end up the year, start spring training, here's Sam. I don't know how much money he got. All I know, he got a nice bonus. Sam would start the season. Halfway through the year, Sam would come down, and then I'd come up at the end of the year. So it was the era of the big bonuses, and of course $500 was a big bonus. So I know Kenny Coon, I think with Cleveland was the first. I think Kenny Coon got like $100,000 or something. And we never heard of that kind of money. Of course, Kenny never went anywhere.
Sure.
But like I said, there was probably kids down there that were better than him. But when they spend that kind of money,
yep.
It's, hey, we've got to bring him up.
And they do the same thing.
We're not making money with him down there playing B-ball and A-ball. He's got to be up here. So it was a big bonus time coming, and I was going too early for it.
After you got called up in 1962, you pitched well in relief for Cleveland for the rest of the season, but yet on April 8th of the following year, 1963, the Indians sold you to the Minnesota Twins. What did you think of the deal at the time?
Well, I think it is. I thought it was the greatest thing that ever happened to me, because I thought now I got a chance. I couldn't do it with Cleveland. So maybe now with another club, if they wanted to buy me, that they must have had some idea, that, well, there was finally a time where somebody spent some money on me, so maybe they'd have to say, well, we got to try him because we got money invested in him.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, I pitched against a bunch of those guys, and I knew them real well, and I knew they had a great ball club, so I was sticking to that.
But, just a month or so after you were acquired by the Twins, you kind of became their go-to closer, and you had an unbelievable run for the rest of the season. What do you remember about that year?
That's like giving a kid his first ice cream sundae, or his first taste of ice cream, or a teenager, his first T-bone steak. I thought, this is heaven all wrapped up in one. I never spent the whole year in one place. My wife would be here for 3 or 4 months or 3 months, and boom, we were traveling across the country. Like I said, they were a bunch of great guys. We all got along good. Jim Cott, which was my roommate, Jim helped me a whole lot. And it was just like buying you and your wife buying your first house.
Mm-hmm.
I said, hey, geez, man, I realized with Cleveland, hey, this major league is nice. But when I went to Minnesota, I said, hey, this major league is heaven. Mm-hmm. You spent the whole year, with one ball club. You was respected. The fans, they wrote a song about me up there. Some young, I think. young lady. Bill Bailey, won't you please come in? The fans were great. I never knew what the wife and I would think about Minnesota, but we spent two winters up there and survived it. The people were tremendous. I tell you what, Minnesota, Minneapolis was a big, I hope the people, if they hear this, don't give me, was a big country town, city.
Yeah.
It was a city, but they were country people, which I was used to. Everybody, they weren't snobbish. Everybody, they invite you to do this. People took me ice fishing. I did some hunting. Everybody was just, like I said, they were country people living in a big city.
Yeah, that's probably a good way to describe it. You know, you had a tremendous run, and you know, you became a legend in Minnesota that season. And like you said, you even had a song written about you. You know, what was it like to go, you know, from being basically a relative unknown to a star overnight?
To be very honest with you,
you earned it. I'm not saying that.
I know that. No, I never really looked at it that way. I looked at it. I was playing a game that I always loved. I was doing something that you always dream about. You know. People in the major leagues, you know, you go to a town somewhere, you know, and people say, oh, that, you know, that Bill Bailey, it's a twin stopper. As far as going to my head, I hope it didn't. I hope I'm still married to the same woman, so surely I didn't get too outsmarty with her or anything.
Sure.
It was a thing of going to your job and doing the best job that you could and hoping that it turned out right. Hoping you give the people who pay to come to the ball game, you give them their money's worth. I don't know what else to say. Like I said, I'm still married to the same beautiful woman, so I don't guess I got too hotty-totty with her, and she's still with me for 6 years. So it was just going out there and doing your job and doing it in a place where people respected you and the ball club respected you, and you were just tickled with that you could do it.
Yeah. You know, earlier you mentioned the bat with the home run and everything. And on August 7th at Dodger Stadium against the Angels, in the top of the ninth, you hit a three-run homer off Julio Navarro. I think Sports Illustrated said you did it with a bat borrowed from Bob Allison and while you were wearing Harmon Killebrew's batting helmet. Tell us about that home run.
Well, later on I found out that the announcer fell off the stool, announcing the air announcer. Geez, I can't think of his name. The guys in the bullpen all threw their gloves out on the field. You know how when you hit a home run, you come in, everybody's just shaking hands.
Yep.
Everybody just kind of sitting, you know, when you look up. You know?
Gave you the cold shoulder, huh?
Yeah, and finally I said, hey, man, it's in the books, I don't care. And everybody jumps up and pats you on the back. And then as I read the paper, I told him, I said, yeah, that's a shame. Hit a home run, and they give the credit to Harmon Killebrew and Bob Allison. I said, I don't know what it's funny, but if everybody asked me now, and I said, yeah, I said, Julio hung himself the next day in the hotel room. And you'd be surprised if the people say, he did. You know, it's kind of a joke.
Yeah.
Any like me hit a home run off of, you know, boy, you're going to go hang yourself or take a gas pipe or something. But you'd be amazed at the people that, actually, I think, you know, think I was right that this guy did. So, that was one of them things that you remember. You know, there's a lot of things you don't want to forget, and a lot of things that I guess after 75 years kind of stick by your mind. But, yeah, I'll always remember that one.
Yeah. After a super 1963 season where you had a 6-3 record and you had 21 saves and an ERA of 1.99 and 108 plus innings, 1964 was totally different. What happened between 1963 and 1964?
Well, I don't know why it never came out. I've had two or three people ask me the same thing. I tore my rotator cuff.
Uh-huh.
And I guess going back in that day, the rotator cuff wasn't that big a thing. I took 19 shots of cortisone.
Wow.
I went down to Spartanburg, South Carolina. Tried to throw down there. I couldn't. When I wound up at two, I had no idea where the ball was going. I mean, I warmed up one time when he sent me down. I warmed up in the bullpen one time, but Minnesota threw the ball, and I cleaned up the bench. You know, where we sit. I was going at the catcher, and the ball hit over there somewhere. We went somewhere else, and I was out trying to throw the ball against the wall. I took out a spot. Oh, I couldn't come close to it. Matter of fact, when they finally sent me to a specialist, he told me, he said, well, he gave me what they call a dive shot. They shot dive to underneath my shoulder blade, and they took x-rays, and he showed me. He said it was like a dam that busted. And he said, Billy, he said, I can operate. I said, well, what's my chances? He said, I give you one chance out of 100 pitches in. I said, well, if you don't operate, he said, I give you one chance out of 100 operate again. So I said, I tell you what, you take a knife and put it up. A knife to me is for gutting deer and cleaning fish. If that's the best odds you can give me, he said, I'll guarantee you a 10-inch scar on your shoulder. So I'd read stories and heard, you know, about different major league ball players and the life after.
Mm-hmm.
I walked out of it, got a job, forgot all about it. I didn't become what my wife and I call a lot, I didn't become a baseball bum. I just walked away from it. I had a chance to Baltimore call me one Sunday, and I said, you give me $10,000 bonus? They said, we can't do that. I said, you're right. And I said, I can't help you. I said, you'd be wasting my time, and I'd be wasting your time. And we got some friends of ours who've been, after they got out, got divorced. Their wives divorced them. You know, the glory of being a ball player and everything is once you're out, you know. Mm-hmm. And I told my wife, I said, that's it. I'm walking away from the game. Like I said, I love, I came here. I umpired down here for about 6 or 7 years to the little leagues. But as far as trying to get back, trying to be a manager in professional baseball, trying to go back, trying to sign with Baltimore, I said, no, I don't want to become a baseball bum. I married a beautiful young lady. I want to stay married to her. I don't want her to become a second out there by trying to become something that I wasn't now, you know, and leaving her in the background. Like I say, she's always been number one, and that she'll always be number one. So I walked away from the game, and I've had two or three people have asked me that. I played a lot of golf tournaments down here, you know, and two or three people have asked, well, you know, what happened? I said, I tore all the muscles out of my shoulder, my rotator cuff. And like I say, back in the day, who was the Tommy John? Was it Tommy John?
Yeah, they had the Tommy.
The first guy they discovered what a rotator cuff was or something. They operated on Tommy, and I think Tommy came back. So see, the doctor told me I took 19 shots of cortisone. And they'd give me a couple shots of cortisone, and I'd run and throw. Well, the doctor said, the only thing he was doing, he said, you know, if you have a long sleeve shirt and you get a little tear around the elbow, every time you bend that arm, that tear in the elbow gets a little bigger and a little bigger. He said, every time you went out the throat, he said, that tear got a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger. And he said, finally, you got a couple little threads hanging on each side of that muscle. He said, you know, he said, that's why I can't help you. He said, I'll give you one chance out of 100.
Wow.
I said, Doc, I appreciate it. I walked away from baseball, still loved it, would love to have spent 50 years up there with them people up there. Like I say, they were the greatest fans. My wife and I right now And a lot of people say, you're crazy. You might find right now, if we ever probably move somewhere, it would be back to Minnesota. We left some wonderful friends up there. And I know the weather up there gets cold, but you learn to live in a lot of places. But we're back home now in our old home state of Virginia, and we've got a lot of friends down here, and everything is great. So, like I said, she's still with me after 6 years, so I guess I'm doing something right anyway.
You absolutely are. I mean, you walked away from the game at the age of 29 and had your head screwed on well enough to be able to survive that and, you know, move on and with your life and have a wonderful life. That, you know, you can't beat that.
That's what I say. We still get the bubblegum cards. We kind of sit down and sign them when they come in and get them back to the kids. What gets me now and really burns me up more than anything, we get a card with $10 in it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who in the world, and somebody told me that he took his kid, well, it's been a couple of years ago, he took his kid to a signing one time, and the guy was making like maybe $10,000, $100,000, probably making $100,000 or whatever, $1 million, whatever, and the guy got his kid went up, got his autograph, and the guy said, give me $5 for that. I said, you've got to be kidding. A man making $1 million, $2 million, $5 million, $1 and $5 or something for the sign of kid's autograph. Now, by God, when you get that bad, I'm bad, I don't watch baseball. I'm bad, I don't watch any of this old stuff. You got pro football players that's out here. Now, my wife and I have always had a dog, love dog. Got pro football players making, I don't know how much money they're making.
Yep.
Killing dogs and dog fighting. If that's your sports today, I don't want nothing to do with them.
Yeah.
So like I said, it's a wonderful world. It's a great sport. If they go back to playing, I don't know where these kids ever got the money up to $5 million, $6 million. I don't think the president don't even make that much money, does he?
No.
Here, another thing you look at, our economy, in the shape it's in. You've got a guy here playing something that he loves, making $10 million. I mean, hey, something's wrong somewhere.
Absolutely, there is, but unfortunately, it's the way it is. You know, I sent you a baseball card to sign one time, because I've been trying to get players that played for the Twins to sign a card for me, and I just keep them. I don't sell them or anything, and you were kind enough to sign that and return it, and I really appreciate that.
Well, you know, a lot of people say maybe these people are selling them cards. I don't care. If they think enough of me to send a card, and if I sign it, if they can make, like I tell most people, they say, how do you get your card? I said, well, most places I've ever talked to, they'll give you $10 to take my card. It don't cost you nothing. So like I say, if some kid can take my card and get $10 for it and buy him a soda pop or buy him a McDonald's hamburger, I'm just take with that. He sent it to me, you know.
Yeah.
So what they do it after that is, you know, glory be with them, whatever.
Yeah. You know, you've got 4 years in the major leagues, but you said that, you know, you didn't qualify for the pension. You know, it just seems to me that anyone that pitched in the major leagues should qualify for some type of a pension. Isn't any, you know, the guys that are playing now have got wonderful pensions.
Yeah, I know that. See, back in them days, it was 5 years you had to be in. And somebody asked me, said, well, why did they keep you? I said, listen, that's a business. I couldn't help them.
Yeah.
You know? And what are they going to do, pay me to sit on the bench for a year? I said, that's not business. If that's the case, that'd be the dumbest business people ever lived. But there was a lawyer that called us one year. And as a matter of fact, it cost us about $200-$300 on it. He said, sending a couple $100, and they was going to look into this about a lot of the retired ball players that got 4 year
sure.
half years or four and three quarter years, and that they was going to take this before the courts or whatever. Well, about a year later, he said, "Well, send another $100. I think we're getting the same pretty close." Well, that was the end of it. I don't guess it ever went any further. And then we had a questionnaire the other day from, what was that, from the Ball Players
Alumni Association?
Well, I forget who it was now because I told the wife, I said, well, that's another bunch of crap. And it was saying that they was trying to get former ball players who had, you know, a few years in, trying to get them, and they wondered what we were doing. And like the wife said, well, you know, what do you tell them? I said, well, tell them I'm 75 years old and I'm out here working 50 hours a week.
Yeah.
You know, don't bull kid. So, like I said, I told her, I said, I don't, you know, she filled it out and sent it back, and now we haven't heard anything since, and I told her, I don't think we will hear anything, you know. We're kind of dried up and in the past, and so I really don't think they're going to do a whole lot to even look back into it.
Yeah, most of them just kind of look at it as, you know, they would just as soon not even think about that those things went on and just move on and just go about their life as if nothing had happened.
Well, see, that's what I told her. You know, if they think I'm going to sit down and sit around this house here and worry, you know, hey, maybe they're going to do something, and knowing deep down inside they're not going to do anything. Now, I'm doing just what I worked against all these years. I'm getting hepped up over something that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Just like if I'd have been hepped up and for 2 or 3 years there, saying, man, I'm going to get back to the baseball, I probably wouldn't be married today because I'd have probably been just a sorry piece of material out there that my wife wouldn't have meant anything, my kids wouldn't have meant anything. It was, I'm going to get back to the majors, I'm going to get back to the majors. And like I say, that's what happened to some of these guys that we knew. The wife, I guess, finally said, hey, matter of fact, we know a couple of them that went into the minor leagues down in D-ball, C-ball, well, they don't have DNC now, but back in them days, that went down in the lower minor leagues. You don't make that kind of money in the minor leagues. You're up riding buses, you're doing it. And I can imagine somebody's wife saying, hey, we were up the major leagues living, you know, one time, if I might go out and get a job and keep living like we're people that enjoy life, and instead of saying, you know, well, I'm on it, he's going to make it back to the majors. He's going to, hey,
sure.
You only got so many managers in the major leagues, and you got a lot of minor leagues out there. So,
yep.
Like I said, I walked away from it. I loved it. I loved it when I was there. I loved it for years after I got out, and watched it as a fan, and then when it turned into what it got to be, I said, I don't watch it anymore. I'm a big football but now, what do you call it, couch potato. I love to watch my football. So it's just to the point that I left the game. I'm glad I left the game. I enjoyed every minute while I was there. I played baseball with some of the greatest guys that ever lived, I think, and I'm glad I did what I did. I'm glad I still got this gorgeous woman sitting over here next to me. And I think things worked out for me the way I hope they would work out.
That's great. Most of your minor league games had you pitching as a starter, and several times you threw over 200 innings. In the big leagues, you never started a game. All 119 of your games were pitched in relief. Were you okay with pitching in relief, or would you have preferred to have been a starter?
Listen, hey, I prefer being a war boy if they took me up there, just sitting on the bench up there. No, I was blessed with, of course, it didn't happen there towards the end, but I was blessed with an arm I could. In the minor leagues, I did it a couple of times. I'd lay my arm up on the top of the dugout, and then I'd got to start a ball game. I could get up in 2 or 3 pitches, was ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, you know, in the majors, as soon as they seen that, they said, hey, you know, we need somebody that can call down and say, hey, we need somebody to hurry. They don't want a guy taking 15 minutes. You know, in 15 minutes, the other teams hit 27 home runs. So it ended up... And like I said, when I got down there, I loved it. I ended up to be a short. man. They didn't call me until the seventh inning. You learn to watch a lot of the ball game. Got to talk to a lot of the guys. And that way, you find out more about each other.
Sure.
You know, this guy likes to hunt and fish. This guy likes to play golf. This guy likes to do this. And you could sit down there and enjoy the game and know you didn't have to worry about it. Not until the seventh inning, you started saying, I remember Sam Mealy called down there one time. Hal Narrigan was our bullpen catcher, manager, or whatever you want to call it. Sam Mealy called down and said, I've been in six games in 6 days. And he called down and said, whatever I do, I don't want Daly up. Well, Hal told me, I said, hey, man, that's what I'm here for. I love this game. I ended up pitching in seven ball games in 6 days. But I loved it. I could go out and do it. I got hurt. But what the devil? If you were about getting hurt, you would last a month up there.
Sure.
Because you'd be holding back. And another reason, but I always had good control, then I threw a sinker, which they hit a lot of ground balls.
Yeah.
So between throwing a sinker, could warm up in a hurry, and having a team, because most of the time when you went in, there was guys on base or something. So between the three, the combination of the three, they probably said, hey, we can use him in the bullpen, and it probably ended up, the best thing in the world for me is being in a bullpen.
And that kind of leads to my next question is, what pitches did you throw, and what did you consider your out pitch?
My out pitch was probably a sinker. I threw side on. And every now and then, I threw a three-quarter, but my out pitch was a sinker. I threw a low slider, fastball, a changeup. Well, of course, everything is a change. All depends on how you hold your ball. You can hold it way back in your hand. It's a changeup. Hold that one in your tips, your fingers. It's a fastball. So it's a lot for your position of ball, for your different speed of pitches. But like I said, a sinker ball to a left-hander, low and away, because he has to reach out. He's trying to hit a ball that's going down. A right-hander was jamming with it. I could knock a net off a dog's time part about 66 feet. So I had good control. I didn't walk a lot of people. Didn't strike out a lot, but I didn't walk many. And that's kind of one thing that they look for when you went into the bullpen.
Yep.
So, like I said, probably the sinker. And of course, now, let's see. I swear I didn't forget him sitting either. The guy played with Baltimore. That was all that came out. He suggested Daly, how do you put it? No, Daly, lack of the pitches he throws are all wet.
Gaylord Perry?
Huh?
Gaylord Perry?
No. This was a hitter for Baltimore.
Okay.
And he was talking, they were talking about getting him out or something. He said, yes, that his pitches are all wet. So one of the Baltimore sports writers asked me a question, and I said, well, I said, I can't say I do, I can't say I don't, but I said, if I do, just tell him to hit the dry side. That's all he's going to do.
Yeah.
Well, but of course, this stuff didn't go over too big. But, anytime you're getting somebody out, you're doing something, you're doctoring the ball, you're doing something. Now, Gaylord, I know, I talked to his brother, George Jim Perry. I know Gaylord went through quite a few bottles of Vaseline that one year. I think Gaylord had Vaseline in his hair, Vaseline behind his kneecap, that Vaseline under his belt. Well, that ain't nothing. I mean, the guy's out there trying to make a living, and if he can get him out with that and don't get caught, more power to him.
Yep. You played, and we touched on this before, but you played baseball in the 50s and the 60s, and I try to ask most of the people that I interview is, if you could have played in another era other than the one you played in, what would have been your choice? Or was the era that you played in, you think, the best?
I think the years I was there, I think were the best years, because at that time, we were making mm-hmm. you can make a living. I think you had some of the greats back in those days. I know, you know, back in Babe Ruth days, you had Babe Ruth, you had a Ty Cobb, and just the ball players that we had with your Willie Mays and your Harmon Killebrews and your Mickey Mantles and Roger Maris, Billy Martin, just going down the line, naming, instead of saying, oh yeah, we had Mickey Mantle. No, you had this guy, and Yogi Bear. You had guys that are still talked about today that was all combined. And it seemed like in that particular time is when the names really started to fall in. Instead of having one guy or two guys, you had a... somebody asked me one time, said, who's the toughest hitter you ever faced? I said, I don't know. I never faced an easy one. I don't know who you're going to call the toughest hitter. Once I faced, they were all tough. So you couldn't say, oh, yeah, this guy, I get him out anytime I want to.
Sure.
Or this guy, I didn't worry about him. No, sir, if they came up there with a bat, I knew I couldn't throw lollipops up there. You had a guy who could take you out of the park any time, or you had a guy who could get a hit any time. So, like I said, going back to the question, I think, and right then, that was, if I had to do all over, I'd say right there.
Yeah.
Right there. I know today they make more money, but I've seen a lot of things that people make a lot of money, and I tell you what, they weren't any more happy in my life than I.
That's right. It's not all about the money.
No, sir.
Who was your favorite manager and why, Bill?
I'd say, well, I had a guy in the minor leagues, Pinky May. Probably my wife just said, good old Pinky May. she remembers. Pinky was a heck of a nice guy. I don't think Pinky ever got mad at you, but he would sit you down and talk to you and try to tell you what you did wrong or what you did. And Pinky talked a lot about life, not baseball, but life. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sam Mealy, of course, Sam gave him my big shot. You know,
sure.
The one that had him by me. He was the one that really, you know, he was the one that gave me my shot in the major leagues.
Yeah. And I talked to Sam, I don't know, maybe almost a year ago now, did an interview with him, and he was very, very nice.
I tell you, like I said, him and his wife were real nice people. Like I said, he was the one that gave me my shot up there. And like I say, I played under Pinky about 3 years in the minors. And Pinky not only taught baseball, but he taught you a lot about life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And life wasn't all peaches and cream. You had your ups and you had your downs. And of course, the wife and I went through that. We had our daughter died at 18. So, you know, we seen what he was trying to tell us.
Sure.
You're going to have problems. You're going to live through them. You can't take a problem and get down to baseball. I could have took that and said, you know, that's it. I could have ended up getting divorced, being a bum. Our daughter died. My wife and I could have split up and said, you know, blah, blah, blah. But we survived both of those.
And that's not easy.
No, sir. Like I said, it's easy if you want to give up and say no. You know, a lot of times now, going down the road, and I know we don't do much of a funny job, but I know my wife does. A lot of times going down the road, I get tears in my eyes. You know,
yeah.
I'm thinking about our daughter.
Yeah.
And that's been how many years now? About 35 years ago.
Wow.
But I still, you still think about it. And like I said, not all the time, but sometimes by yourself, you know, memories come back. But like I said, it didn't get us down. I had a guy, a good friend of ours, bought me a sip of whiskey. He said, here, you know, you might need this. I said, let me tell you something. I said, if I drink a fifth of whiskey and stay drunk for 6 months, when I sober up, my daughter's still dead.
Yeah.
I said, no, I said, my wife and I will survive this. And I went out that. God, life is beautiful. We both got our health. We both got a great son. Got a great grandson. My wife's sister just died. My brother died of cancer. So we don't have much between our two families. My sister is only one in my family. My wife doesn't have anybody in her family. But we've survived it, and we still love each other. And matter of fact, I just took her to McDonald's for her anniversary. Yeah, I got a reservation at McDonald's, bought her a dozen dandelions. So we'll still hard at it.